are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
We now light the chalice. You'll be relieved to know we are in a Unitarian service. I did like the bass notes though. To face the world's shadows, a chalice of light. To face the world's coldness, a chalice of warmth. To face the world's terrors, a chalice of courage. And I welcome you here on behalf of the generations of Unitarians who've worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We're a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and to follow their own spiritual path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world. And I hope you can join us after the service for tea, coffee, and conversation. Doing the readings today, and this is going to be a shared activity. I'm going to introduce them. We're reading an excerpt from Karen Anderson's sermon, Changing the Fairy Tale. She's a co-senior minister at the First Unitarian Church of Rochester in New York and co-founder and president of Connect and Breathe, an after-abortion non-judgmental talk line. Now, it's said that when a baby elephant is being trained, she's tied to a post almost immediately after birth. During the first weeks of life, she attempts to break free from her restraints, but she's not strong enough, so she comes to believe she can't get away from what is holding her back, even after she has grown large and plenty powerful to uproot the post entirely. As a consequence, even as an adult, she remains tied to the post due to internally motive behaviour that is no longer rooted in external reality. We are like the baby elephant. So today I'll offer up four doorways, if you will. There are more, but four that I'm asking you to pick just one. Pick one that you're passionate about to help set the feminist elephant fully free. Now, the first one will be read by Christine.
I imagine a world that votes for women. A Stanford University study found women members of Congress introduce on average 3 more bills per session, attract more co-sponsors for the legislation, and bring home more money to their districts than their male counterparts. Women in office help change the power balance. They are also less likely to even think that they should go into politics. That gender self-doubt stuff. So they need encouragement and faith from people like us, showing our children that we believe in them. And seeing we have our confidence in women as leaders, vote for women.
I imagine a world that openly expresses our views. Share your intentions with others. Share your fluidity with gender. The other day, in the Wegmans grocery parking lot, there was a big, burly guy who parked his car. He had on a large parka and was over 6 feet tall. The bumper sticker on his car said, "Men who change diapers change the world." I almost ran after him to give him a hug. I realised that he was saying more to my daughter, to whom I pointed out the sticker, and to her self-esteem, than to any of us who have convictions but don't share them. Elie Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor, upon accepting the Nobel Prize, said, "Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented." You, as men, wear your "This is what a feminist looks like" t-shirt to your next men's small group, or while you lead a workshop, or serve as a religious education traveller with our children. Wear your gay pride shirt to the YMCA, especially if you're straight. Share your fluidity with gender every day. Be outspoken about it.
I imagine a world that accepts responsibilities for parenting equally. When George Stephanopoulos was announced as the new Good Morning America anchor to succeed Diane Sawyer, he was asked to keep his Sunday morning show as well. But he said no. He told the New York Times, "I just can't do both jobs for long and also help raise a family." Way to go, George. If you are a dad, be open about your family life obligations with those at work, with your friends, neighbours, with those at church and around our children here. Further, share housework. It has a payoff. Studies have shown, by the way, that couples who share the load with housework as well as the financial burden, how to politely put this, they get more action, if you will, at home. So a bonus. But I'd like you to share housework because it helps your children see it's not just a mother's role, another gender-specific job, but both of you doing work that is equally valued, family working together.
I imagine a world that all of us take seriously the gender biases within the teaching profession. A dance teacher in rural Wisconsin knows it's hard to get boys whose dads are farmers to think it's okay to take dance lessons, much less pay for those lessons. So every year she offers an entire year of dance free for new male students. And every year she gets about 20 young little guys in the class. The second year of dance they pay, but by then they're hooked. She has more boy dancers in the studio than anyone in the surrounding area. Further, she finds with boys in the class, her girls are riskier, more apt to be adventurous with new routines or difficult jumps, more self-assured with the boys in the room than without. It's a win-win for everyone.
Where in your professional life are the gender separations working to continue the stereotypes, holding back some humans' potential? And what could you do to make gender more fluid for everyone's benefit? So there you have it, four ways to change to set the elephant free. For the sake of all our inherent worth and dignity, but also our children who watch us, I'm telling you, the power is in our hands. Save a kid today and begin by doing something more than just imagining. And that was a service run by Reverend Karen Anderson. It's time for our meditation. So please make yourselves comfortable and steady your breathing. The topic for today's meditation is transcending boundaries, and the words are from Yvonne Sion. "When I was a child, I would stand and gaze at the starry firmament and contemplate infinity. As I stood there, the boundary that is time dissolved. I expanded my spirit to fill the boundary that is space. My being stilled and all fear, anxiety and anguish disappeared, forgotten with the chores, the homework and the ordinary aggravations about me." Transcending boundaries was fun in those days, but as I reached adulthood, it became more difficult. More and more, I was aware of the boundaries of race, class, age, and sex. I felt myself cringe as the bantering youth in the street came near. I felt myself become tearful as I encountered a senior citizen living with pain or limited choices on a fixed income. I felt myself become angry when I was subjected to indignities of being rejected by others because of my colour, or because I'm a woman, or because of the blind person or the openly gay person I was with. I felt myself become unwilling to acknowledge my oneness with the addict or the homeless people sleeping on the benches in the park. Today, transcending boundaries is hard work. Sometimes, when I'm at my best, I remember that the other I that I distinguished myself from could be me in another time, in another place, in another circumstance. So I take a few deep breaths and begin to release the fears that are the boundaries between me and my fellow humans. When is a phobia not a phobia? Definition. A phobia is a persistent, excessive, unrealistic fear of an object, person, animal, activity, or a situation. A person with a phobia tries hard to avoid the thing that triggers the fear, or they endure it, suffering great anxiety and distress. We can probably all identify someone who is ridiculously panicky about particular animals. You might be afraid of going to the dentist, or you might be discomforted by clowns, but some people are phobic about them. Fear of heights, narrow or dark spaces, or thunderstorms are all sensible life-saving fears. But if ramped up to phobias, that is, instead of trepidation, you sweat, you freeze, your heart pounds, you faint, defecate, vomit, you have a phobia. Public speaking, eating out, or using a public toilet can produce either anxiety or a phobia. I guess agoraphobia is one that you hear about a lot because it can develop quite late, out of the blue. It can be defined as the fear of any environment from which it's difficult to exit quickly, so queues, theatres, public transport. Most little children have a phobia or two which they grow out of. The sound of the toilet flushing, dogs, balloons, whatever. But later onset phobias often require professional intervention to deal with or to overcome. And the medical profession seemed to be very keen on giving them really weird names. So, it's quiz time. On your way in, you were given a card with names of three phobias. We'll spend 3 minutes now trying to find the answers. You don't need to write them down. The name might be misleading, or it might be helpful. But these are the rules. You translate into plain English the meaning of any of all of the three phobias on your card. You're allowed to consult anybody here, but not your smartphone. And you can collect another card if you want to try and get up to the magic number 3, because I've got plenty here. Okay, so buzz time. See if you can get to 3. I have given out some answer sheets. Is there anyone who can't see one? They were just for the curious. But even if you don't care what the flipping answers were, because does it matter, can you glance through the list and can you find any glaring omission in the list of phobias? Just think of what you've experienced before today in the service. Would anybody like to suggest something that wasn't mentioned?
Homophobia,
that's it. These lists that I gave you were compiled by people with a background in psychology and psychiatry. Now, from a therapist's point of view, Phobias come from anxiety and fear, whereas homophobia, biphobia, transphobia has a more troublesome origin. It's not fear, it's disgust. What is worse, that disgust is culturally transmitted in a similar way to racial hatred or racial superiority. Brendan, can we have the song from South Pacific, please? Thanks, Brendan. Can anyone else remember seeing that the film or seeing that one on stage? It was a great musical. Like racism, homophobia isn't phobia. It's in the same family as those disgust and culturally transmitted disorders. On May the 17th, the World Health Organization declassified homosexuality as a mental disorder. For this reason, that date was chosen for the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia and Biphobia. I think it's no accident that the founder of the International Day is black, Louis-Georges Thin, who founded it in 2005. The main purpose of the day is to raise awareness of violence, discrimination and repression of LGBTQ communities worldwide, which in turn provides an opportunity to take action and engage in dialogue with the media, with policymakers, public opinion and wider civil society. Now, the day is really strong in Europe and Latin America, where it's commemorated with public events in almost all countries. Common actions include large-scale street marches and parades and festivals. In Cuba, for example, Mariela Castro led out a huge street parade for the past 3 years with 50,000 people in it each time. In Chile, too, Christianity has played a significant role in social and political life throughout Chilean history. Most of the population are Christian, 84%. Most of the Christians are Roman Catholic, 67%. Both male and female same-sex activity is legal in Chile, but it only has been since 1999. In 2012, a law banning discrimination and hate crimes based on sexual orientation and gender identity was approved. Civil unions rather than marriages were legalised in 2020, so not as much status as a marriage. Australia, of course, is less Christian and more friendly to homosexual people. Ida Hobbit Day is celebrated on university campuses, and you'll see the odd parade in Frankston and various other city locations. But the big deal here is pride marches, which I guess are more positive, aren't they? Should we then rest on our laurels and assume that homophobia exists in a few backward niches, but it's basically no big deal? Well, maybe not. The federal government's contentious religious discrimination bill passed through the House of Representatives after a marathon session of Parliament, and independent MP Rebecca Sharkey's amendment passed because Bridget Archer, Trent Zimmerman, Fiona Martin, Katie Allen and Dave Sharma rebelled to repeal Section 38(3) of the Sex Discrimination Act that allows religious schools to discriminate against students on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, marital or relationship status, or pregnancy. Now, that vote was carried by a margin of 65 to 59. Labor called it a crushing win. I call it a close call. 65 to 59 in a marathon session? Ms. Sharkey said that while she voted against the religious discrimination bill, she was proud to have played a small part in making bad legislation better. The Christian lobby letterboxed us all twice in Mayo for the election with that graphic. Rebecca identifies as Christian. She was a bit peeved, and she did begin a court action against them because they used an image that they didn't own, which oddly was quite an attractive photo, isn't it? Nothing like the grim images we saw on Stobie polls, you know, it won't be easy under Albanese, or the ones reflecting on the inadequacies of Morrison. I mean, they were terrible pictures. It's quite pretty. But other candidates were targeted too. That was about schools. But all the same, blatant discrimination and homophobia is hard to get away with in the broader Australian community. Transphobia is more of a threat. The New South Wales candidate, notorious for anti-trans tweets and blogs, was fortunately defeated by an independent who doesn't indulge in such questionable behaviour. It is legally and ethically on the nose. The Sex Discrimination Act of Australia makes it unlawful to treat a person less favourably than another person in a similar situation because of gender-related identity, appearance, mannerisms, or other characteristics. Now, free speech is sometimes invoked in an effort to bypass the law. For example, if someone had reservations about us employing gay or trans or intersex people as minister or front office person or whatever, and they wanted to discuss it with the search committee or at a meeting, the search committee or the committee of management could invoke not only Unitarian values, they could also invoke the law of the land to safeguard the right of those applicants seeking employment. It's not up for discussion. Free speech, of course, has a checkered history. It can be used by extremists or moderates. It can be used by the left wing. It can be used by the right wing. But it should not be used to try and get around the law. There are thin edge of the wedge techniques to winkle discrimination in. For example, if we let the American-style public bathroom legislation in, we would risk not only trans people being harassed by others, but anyone who isn't instantly identifiable as male or female. Concern about trans women having an advantage in competitive sport is legitimate. But banning transgender or intersex people or insisting they can only enter the men's competition is not helpful. By contrast, open categories and mixed teams are useful in this context. So is having a look at whether hormones and musculature is even an issue in all activity, in all sports. Homophobia might not be a classic phobia, but it is a reality in people's lives and is recognised as a threat to human rights in our law. But it's sneaky. It's a sneaky phenomenon like racism. We may think we harbour none, but it might be lurking in our preferences and behaviour and is all too obvious to people who are homosexual, trans, bi or intersex. In Australia, where sex and gender information is collected and recorded in a personal record, individuals are given the option to select M for male, F for female or X, which might mean indeterminate, intersex or unspecified. Australia was the first country to conduct a parliamentary inquiry into involuntary or coerced medical interventions on intersex people. In 2016, the family court case authorising gonadectomy and consequent surgery on a young child attracted public commentary for disclosing those medical interventions, their rationales, and a prior clitoridectomy and labiaplasty. In May the following year, March, the Australian and New Zealand community organisations issued a joint call for legal reform, including the criminalisation of deferrable intersex medical interventions on children, an end to legal classification of sex, and improved access to peer support. Rights for people in that X category are very new. Marriage was not recognised for them between 2004 and 2017, unless the parties concerned were one male and one female. The Australian Psychology Association gives parents advice. It's important that parents and families are informed about their child's intersex variations and are supportive of their child's right to make decisions about their bodies. It's not recommended for infants to have surgery or take hormones unless medically necessary, meaning parents are advised to be careful about consenting to any medical interventions. Parents may need to negotiate with doctors to ensure any interventions are done with their child's informed consent. A European study found that while parents are asked for proxy consent to treat their child, they're often not informed and they're not often given sufficient information or time to make decisions. Parents should wait until a child is able to communicate and participate in decisions about potential surgeries before proceeding. Many parents find that support groups run by and for people with intersex variations can be helpful and informative. Now that's the official stuff that the Australian Psychology Association gives to parents. There are medical practitioners who are not so enlightened. The decision-making principles published in 2010 in Melbourne, for the Melbourne Children's Hospital, include minimising psychosocial risks to children through medical intervention, including the risk of impaired bonding with their parents and reduced opportunities for marriage. Victoria later removed marriageability as a criterion, but there are still surgeries being done for conditions that later correct themselves or surgeries done for problems that might happen. What is so wrong about corrective surgeries is that there are many alterations that have to be made to genitally ambiguous babies that need to be done over and over and over as the child grows. And that means they're subjected to examination of their privates regularly. Well, that's not the experience of other children, is it? And it causes shame and anxiety. People born with an intersex condition are about 1 in 1,700. In other words, they're about as common as redheads. Yet they grow up thinking they're the only ones. They can be talked into painful, repetitive, mutilating surgery if they're not shown an alternative. So many children are brought up instructed to lie about their hospitalisation, we were on holiday, sworn to secrecy, or told lies of omission and commission. Australian research has shown that 19% of the people born with atypical sex characteristic selected an X when they were able to choose, All 52% selected women and 23% men, 6% unsure. This is reflective of the fact that our society is demanding the impossible, that you should be male or female. Of course, once you've made the choice, you'll be found wanting. Appearance, fertility, function. Medical practitioners can help with all three, but there are always risks, which is why non-consensual intervention is morally wrong. Secrets and lies can cause widespread ignorance in society, which makes it hard to find a safe public toilet. It makes it hard to get through airport security. The machines aren't configured for X people. And of course, when the machine goes bing, 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 they're rushed off for a genital exploration. Not pleasant. Our Australian government guidelines recognise that individuals may identify as a gender other than the sex they were assigned at birth, or may not identify as exclusively male or female. But the categories of male and female remain unchanged. The government recognises any one of the following as sufficient evidence: a statement from a registered practitioner or psychologist, a valid Australian travel document like a passport, a state or territory birth certificate. So what I'm saying is that we're in a good position here to consolidate our gains in this area. But we need to do so or they can be lost. The chief threats to people are ignorance, vilification and condemnation from oddball religions and avoidance of the issue in education. I'm sure that surprises no one. After all, in the last election, neither party wanted to go there. Did you hear a dicky bird about education? It's an area of huge concern and suspicion. But we have been there before. It is now usual for schools to provide elementary sex education and to discuss important concepts like consent with students. We need to allow the curricula to extend into the area of gender identity and gender preference to be inclusive of the clientele, that is, all of our kids. Our kids are male, female, and X. I'm going to finish today with a short excerpt from Hida Viloria, a Venezuelan born in 1968 in very, very fortunate circumstances. Her father was a doctor, so the doctors couldn't lie about his newly born daughter and render her unmistakably female by operating on her. But her father had gone through training without learning the current orthodoxy that reassignments were advisable. Her mother insisted right through her childhood that privates were private, so she was spared examinations throughout her childhood. She did her own investigations and found her own way, which was difficult. She'd wake up one day feeling male and another day feeling female. She was very fortunate in being raised in San Francisco. On the beach while holidaying in Costa Rica, she was accused of being a boy in a girl's swimsuit. She'd had her period since she was 11, but saying so wouldn't have helped. On the other hand, this freedom in America to act out however she felt on the day came with isolation, as people all around her were celebrating transitioning into their true identity. So I'm going to give you a little excerpt from her memoir explaining her liberation from the idea that she had to be either one or the other.
After riding around for a bit longer, I learned that Jared is a DJ, and he knows a lot of other DJs at the festival. He takes us to where one of them is spinning. The guy's name is Lauren, but he's known by his stage name, Bass Nectar. And it turns out he's amazing. His music is some of the coolest dance music I've ever heard. And I was into the early 90s SF Underground outdoor dance party scene, before they were called raves. So I've heard a lot of good DJs in my day. While listening to him, I dance my ass off, and my thighs off, and my feet off. I dance my way into another dimension, a dimension where I'm not dancing along to the music, I am predicting the music. I'm one step ahead of it, pouncing on every beat like I know exactly when it's going to drop, like the DJ and I are telepathically connected. Through the glorious haze of my dancing, I notice that people are staring at me. A lot of girls in particular, and I like the expression on their faces. I feel like I'm a magnet for both curious and beautiful girls and boys. I'm wearing these low-rise velvet pants with a psychedelic pattern that I got with Beth ages ago at Patricia Field, our favorite clothing store in the village. My top is a child-sized Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt that I pulled and stretched till it was big enough for me to squeeze into. The bottom makes it just past my breasts, so you can see my whole stomach, which is looking more cut than usual with the water loss I've experienced over the past 24 hours.
Go figure.
I look very, is that a boy or a girl? Some things about me are sexy in a womanly way, like my smooth skin and the way my body moves. But then I'm also flat-chested and more muscular than most women, with small hips and an aggressive masculinity to some of my dance moves. My energy moves back and forth from masculine to feminine and everywhere in between. It seems to mesmerize the crowd. Most people can't stop staring and gravitating toward me, although the boys can tell I'm a dyke, so they keep a respectful distance, God bless them. However, I throw some love at both the girls and the boys because I can tell they see me for who I really am. I'm an andro freak, and that's freak in a good way. And they obviously love it. I remember Jade saying my androgyny is the very thing that makes me attractive. As usual, I think she was right. And that's it.
Go forth in simplicity. Find and walk the path that leads to compassion and wisdom. Welcome the stranger. Open your heart to a world in need of healing. Be courageous before the forces of hate. Hold and embody a vision of the common good that serves the needs of all people and leads to happiness, peace, and ease. Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.